our little Kubota tractor, I was operating that today. That's got 1,100 hours. Now, that's not many hours on that little tractor. But the paint is oxidized, and all of the hydraulic hoses except two have been replaced. And it's got a couple little, it seeps here and there, but it doesn't burn any oil, and, you know, it starts nicely, and so it's got lots of life left in it.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We are in the shop at the end of a day, and not an easy day for the Essential Craftsman. He's been breathing cinder block dust and two-stroke exhaust and all that.
Great. So, it's been great, yeah.
So if the tone is a little bit subdued, that's probably why, but we got a couple really important and interesting things to talk about. Before that, one announcement in particular, and that's what I've been doing all day, and that is working on our website, which this is not a sponsored ad, but you can think of it as a sponsored ad because I really do love Squarespace that much. They did actually reach out to us a year ago to promote their platform, and we told them no because we haven't really done that on our YouTube channel, and we don't intend to, but it might fit on here, and mostly because it's just such a great platform, and I all afternoon have been tuning up and working on our website. I'm not a web developer at all. It's very easy, and I was just kind of thinking to myself as I was doing that how much money I was saving by doing that myself as opposed to hiring a developer. Really cool system. If you're a contractor type or any type of self-employed or business owner, we're happy with it. It's been our website since day one.
Here's how great Squarespace is Nate can give me a few simple instructions on how to, you know, input or edit or put some copy in there, and I can do it. And I can not only can I do it right then, but I can do it later. And so that's a good indication of how user-friendly their footprint is.
Yeah,
I like it. And then when I go back to the website, I can get around on it. And I think it's a win.
I think so, too. We kind of stumbled into it. A friend of mine recommended it. And at the time, we just needed a website right away. So just jumped on it. I think because it was the least expensive option at the moment. And maybe it still is. But like I said, this is not a sponsored ad. We are just happy customers. And maybe at some point we'll work something out with Squarespace for the podcast. But what we want to talk about today is heavy equipment and one piece in particular for our spec house project, which is a telehandler. Now, heavy equipment is something that I have never bought. I've never owned. I've never even owned a garden tractor. So I'm coming at this from a perspective that's of no experience. And to underline that, I'm not even really experienced in thinking in terms of heavy equipment. It was only recently on my storage project where the light kind of went off in my head how much easier the whole thing would have been had I bought a tractor or a skid steer or something from the beginning. I've always sort of thought of work in terms of a human body and labor in terms of a human body, I guess just because I wasn't around it much. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a piece of equipment that we're going to need. And Dad, you have bought a lot of heavy equipment and owned a lot of it. Why don't you kind of talk about that for a minute and your experience with it, sort of being around it, owning it at times, but also still doing a lot of work with your own arms, back, neck, boots.
Yeah. So working for other people for the first 19 or 20 years, I was around a lot of heavy equipment on construction, and I learned what a force multiplier equipment is, and that at the right time, the right piece of equipment can just spin the meter so fast in the right direction, and if the right operator is on the right equipment, it spins even faster. I also got over any stereotypes I had about any ideas that the equipment had to be new or had to be any particular brand. All the equipment had to do was do the work. And after I moved back to Oregon, my dad and I, Dad had trucks. He had little log trucks hauling peeler core. And he bought those used, and they provided decades of service for him. And then he and I bought a D4 Cat, a bulldozer rigged to log, bought it used, and sort of settled. We thought we needed a D6. It's a better size, but we saved the money and bought a D4.
What year was this, just for the timeline?
We got back here in 1994, and the tractor was about a 1970 model. So it was 24, 25 years old. It was used. I mean, mm-hmm. It was used. And we got one season out of it and then had to put some final drives in it, and that was an expense. Mm-hmm. And then we got about two more seasons out of it and got onto another job, a logging job, where it was longer yarding and bigger wood, and we thought, this is the time to buy a D6. What a quantum leap that is. A distance between a D4 and a D6 for logging, I mean, it's not a linear improvement. It's an exponential improvement. Mm-hmm. The D6 did so many things so much better. For maybe 40% greater investment, you would have got a 200% increase in productivity and satisfaction. And there was even some safety aspects around mm-hmm. having more kick. So anyway, that was that piece. And then since then, I've owned...
Do you remember what the D4 cost at the time, or the D6 for that matter?
The D4 was a $20,000 bill. And the D6, we traded in the D4 and gave him $10,000.
Okay.
So after using it for three seasons, we traded in the 4, gave him $10,000, and had a machine that was more than twice the capacity.
Hmm.
It was just such a win. But it was a particular machine. It had been cared for. There had been work done on it. It hadn't belonged to a logger. So a big piece of buying... The 6 had not belonged, or at least not for long.
Yeah.
Because logging takes a toll on a cat. And so a big part of buying used equipment is identifying where it came from and what kind of use it had been put to, what its capacity was when it was new, and if there had been modifications, and if it had been maintained, and all those stars lined up, and it was a home run.
Wow. We have a video we did a long time ago. Your friend Martineau, Bill?
Bill Martineau, yeah.
His cat was a 6, and if you want to visualize this and you're thinking of it, the video is called Choker Setting or something like that, and he's got a D6. It is a... It's probably relatively mid-sized cat.
It is a mid-sized.
In terms of like heavy equipment.
Smaller mid-sized cat. And that's almost exactly the cat that Dad and I bought. I mean, mm-hmm. almost exactly.
Yeah, that to me, that kind of speaks to the importance of, tell me if I'm wrong here, but almost right-sizing your equipment.
Yeah.
For example, in the woods, you wouldn't, a D8 or 10, I don't know how high they go, but would that provide an equal improvement in output? Or is...
No.
Or is there kind of a happy medium there?
There's
that the
very
D6
much,
hits?
Very much a happy medium for logging now, or 20 years ago, where the log sizes were smaller. It's a D7 or 8 is just too big and too cumbersome. You lose agility,
mm-hmm.
and it's so expensive to haul, and the fuel consumption's big, and you're hauling little bitty logs anyhow.
Uh-huh.
So a little bitty cat will do some work, and the cat gets bigger, it does more and more work until finally those other characteristics of the work you're doing are no longer conducive to increasing the size of the equipment. And so mm-hmm. for my money, at the D6 was the ideal cat size then.
Yeah, I imagine equipment is like any other tool, where it's easy when you're shopping for it to think, I could buy this tool and it's going to do everything I need. And after you get the hang of it, you start thinking, well, if I only had this other tool, like if we were talking about welders, you could make a case where this welder is the only welder I need.
Yeah.
Until you start welding a lot,
that's right.
And you realize, oh, shoot, actually, if I had this one side by side, then this could happen. And I think for heavy equipment contractors, that's how they end up with a fleet of assortment of sizes,
that's right.
and weights and everything of their equipment, because...
Look at Brian Reynolds. He's got a small excavation company. He bought some tools. He bought a business with some tools, and he's added a couple more tools to the fleet, and he's got a medium-sized excavator and a little excavator, mm-hmm. and he's got two dump trucks, and he's got a towable dump trailer, great mm-hmm. Northern, great mm-hmm. tool. And so you can't buy one tool that will do every job. You just have to identify you have to have a realistic assessment of what your work is, and then an informed guess on what machine will do that work.
That being said, there are some machines that do better at multiple tasks, tractors, being one, skid steers mm-hmm. being one.
Yeah.
And I know there is some debate between of those two, which is a better platform. And again, it just depends. But I know a tractor can have all sorts of attachments and variations to get a lot of things done. And same with the skid steers.
Yeah.
Now, what we're looking at on our site for residential construction, generally, it's not a heavy equipment you know, type of arena, with the exception of the excavation and dirt yeah. work, but you bring somebody in for that who
That's
has
right.
all that. Our site is on a hillside and it's very tight, and so for us it's a little bit different situation, and we are looking at buying a reach machine or a reach forklift or a telehandler or a telescopic lift. I don't actually know what the...
Those are all right.
Why is there not just like one generally approved name, or is there?
Well, I think telehandler kind of encompasses,
yeah.
you know, a reach machine, that they're known as that. And so, yeah, let's just say telehandler.
Okay.
But the fact is that our project on that lot, the real challenge, the real obstacle, the thing that is going to be difficult over and over and over is access and how to get material onto the site because of the site. And the telehandler is going to help a lot. It's going to replace manpower mm-hmm. often. It's going to be a plus.
So a telehandler is, it doesn't look like a forklift. It's a long, kind of big, tall, rubber-tired machine where the forks kind of reach. It has a big boom that starts in the back, and it's basically a forklift that extends 40, 50 feet and also at least 30, 40 feet in the air.
Yeah.
And has four-wheel drive, usually a self-leveling feature, and it's designed for lifting pallets and items up on top of other floors or on buildings or
yeah.
who knows what.
Think of Neil Armstrong landing on the moon and the lunar rover that came after that. This kind of reminds you of a lunar rover with a telescoping fork sticking out of the front. You know, they crab steer, they articulate steer, they steer on the front end,
mm-hmm.
they self-level, they're four-wheel, like you said, they're four-wheel drive or two-wheel drive. And that forklift will go out there and up there a long ways.
Yeah, our problem is we can really only approach our property from the driveway
mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, getting delivery trucks and materials set down. So we're going to have material stacking up in the driveway. And our choices are, we could pick it up by hand and carry it up the stairs and onto the site and onto the roof, which
yeah.
has been done for a long time and we could do.
And we will do.
And we will do. Or some, you know, labor help will do. Mm-hmm. But like we started this conversation, the right piece of equipment can be not just a force multiplier, but that's how you say it. The job
yeah.
could move forward by leaps and bounds. Instead of spending the day
yeah.
or 2 days packing plywood, you would spend 20 minutes setting it up there
right.
and get right to work, and you could be weeks ahead instantly.
And I can't help thinking of this in terms of being 61 years old. You know, I mean, so 20 years ago, you know, this forklift would have been optional. We would have talked about it and decided whether it was worth the cost or some forklift. But now at this age, man, there has to be something besides our backs to move the tons and tons and tons of material into that awkward position.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes not only a productivity booster, but a safety and a longevity. And it's just a win. And I'm excited. I've always wanted to own one of those. I've owned a nice case backhoe. It was great. I mean, we could have a discussion sometime about backhoes versus tractors versus skid steers
mm-hmm.
versus excavators. I mean, trying to identify mm-hmm. the right machine, the most versatile machine. Now I've got that little Kubota. I've had a log loader. But I've always wanted to have a telehandler, because if you're going to build anything, that will put material any place.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm pumped. I'm pumped.
So the debate and we've been talking and planning and sort of head scratching this for months, planning, you know, not just what the right machine would be, but if we need one at all, if we can afford it. A lot of contractors and individuals will buy a piece of equipment and be able to start making money with it the next day.
Mm-hmm.
They take jobs, they bill clients, and the machine not only pays for itself, but starts bringing money in the door. That's not quite the case on a spec house. I mean, it will, but you know, the money's not going to come in the door for a long time. For us, this is a big cash outlay
yeah.
with a more long-term and a less cut and dry payoff.
Yeah.
And yet, as we've said, it's kind of a mandatory piece of equipment for us to get this put together and quickly. So anyways, we've been really debating and wrestling and shopping. There's a, like all equipment, there's small, medium, large, extra large. The costs follow that spectrum relatively closely. There's the age of the machine. So a couple questions for you just about equipment. Generally speaking, how do you look at the hours on a machine? Does it correlate at all to like vehicle miles. That's like a language that a lot of people understand. For right. me, 100,000 miles is a sort of benchmark, and
right.
anything beyond 200,000 miles, you're equally turned off and also impressed. Like, wow, great machine. And
right.
and people who own vehicles with that many miles would swear by them. And right. and so is there some round numbers with equipment that is similar, or is it just not the same?
So anything I say here, there will be people who violently disagree because of specific experience they've had. But I was just looking on that, our little Kubota tractor. I was operating that today. That's got 1,100 hours. Now, that's not many hours on that little tractor. But the paint is oxidized, and all of the hydraulic hoses except two have been replaced. And it's got a couple little, it seeps here and there, but it doesn't burn any oil, and, you know, it starts nicely. And so it's got lots of life left in it. But if you just walk by and look at that tractor from the road, you'd think, huh, yeah, that's been rode hard and put away wet, until you look at the hour meter and you realize, wow, it hasn't been used much. So you have these two different things. You have the appearance of the machine and the hour meter, actually three things: how it looks, what the hour meter says, and what you can tell about how it's been maintained. And so those three things are kind of, they contraindicate each other sometimes. You can have a machine that looks rough, low hours, well maintained. You can have a machine that is poorly maintained, that looks good, and has high hours. And all these three things are kind of like how much, how fast, how good in construction. They don't necessarily tell you anything as a blanket policy, but any one of those three could tell you a lot. For instance, hours have to tell you something. They have to tell you something. These telehandlers that we've been looking at range from, in the price range that we feel like we can afford, range from 3,000 hours to 7, 8, 9, 10, 11,000 hours. Mm-hmm. Now, 11,000 hours on a machine is some time. That's some time. But if it's been perfectly maintained, like, for instance, Brian Reynolds' excavator, where they never started in the morning without greasing it and checking the oil, well, take a chance. You know, take a chance. Mm-hmm. But my little Kubota, I don't check the oil every day, and I grease it rarely. So these mm-hmm. the hours are only one indicator. But I like low hours. I just mm-hmm. like it. You have a fighting chance of getting something that's got some life in it. Mm-hmm. You have often said, you know, you've bought a lot of cars mm-hmm. successfully, that the best way to buy a car is to evaluate and get acquainted with the person that's selling the car.
Mm-hmm. And that really goes for anything you're buying. You know, why is the person selling it? And generally speaking, what's the feeling you get from the person? Yeah. And just that right there can give you some confidence. Mm-hmm. It'd be fun to get Andrew Camerata on here, because that guy buys equipment, and he buys some crazy looking and
he does.
And equipment that... you know, he's really good at fixing it, so he's certainly not scared of doing repairs, and it's impressive, but he would have probably some interesting insights on that.
He would.
And as well as the whole conversation regarding the right size. And not long ago, I remember when I first started watching him, he had one or two small excavators, and I think in one video, he like rolled out three small ones that he bought.
Really?
And I was thinking, like, okay, he's going to fix these up and sell them, but no, he's like, basically, it'll just be nice to have some extras in case, so I can leave one at a job here and there.
Yeah.
And it just makes a lot of sense. If that's your business, you're not having to shuffle things around and move them, and
mobilize.
You always got the right, you can jump in the smaller one on the job, and it just makes a ton of sense. Heavy equipment is to call it a perk of living in this day and age would be an understatement. It's, you know, I can't imagine what people even 60, 70 years ago would think, you know, on job sites, if somebody rolled up in one of those. And
okay, so I can remember when the excavator showed up and became sort of ubiquitous.
Mm.
It was shocking how much work they could do. And I remember watching as the uses for the excavator became more well understood. And you would have an operator who would kind of, anyhow, I was there when excavators were poorly understood.
Mm-hmm.
And now they are perfectly understood, like Andrew Camerata and Brian Reynolds and Dexter and those mm-hmm. guys know how to use them to their max capacity, but the machine existed before people knew what their max capacity was, which mm-hmm. is an interesting thing in itself.
Was it a steam shovel that like was the precursor to excavators?
Yeah.
What were those called with like the ropes, you know? Like
that was a steam shovel, and Sam Ball ran one of those.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 60 miles from here on the road over to Scottsburg and Smith River. He ran a steam shovel.
It was basically the same thing, just slower and less effective, more or less.
It was entirely mechanical, just winches articulating the boom.
And I think the boom like might have swung differently, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of scooped in a different way.
Yeah, for sure.
And powered off of steam, is that
off
right?
Off steam and winches and cables. That's it.
Wow.
And it was a huge improvement. That was a step away from horses and Fresnos. Okay, where you have a Fresno or a scraper or a grader pulled.
What is a Fresno?
A Fresno is kind of a shovel. In fact, I have one leaning up outside of the shop. It's a piece of sheet metal that's bent into kind of a clamshell shape that's pulled by a horse or a team of horses and just cuts into the grade, and then the man pushes down on the back of it, and it slides behind the horse to where you're going, and then you tip it over by hand.
Really?
By hand.
Just basically a scraper.
It's a scraper. It's a wheelbarrow without a wheel that's being pulled by horses that'll scrape.
But you still have to like kind of lift it up and dump it off to the side. Yeah. And then your dirt is only a couple feet over.
It's just a couple feet over,
It's incredible.
Yeah.
All right. Well, very likely you're going to see one of these telehandlers show up on our job site in the next few weeks. Hopefully. We've got our sights on a couple, and they are expensive, and they will help us out a lot. And when we're done, we'll sell the thing and get, hopefully, a lot of our money back. So this is not like buying a ticket to the movies where you hope you enjoy it, because it's when it's done, it's done. This is more like a tool, and when you're done with this tool, you put it back in the hands of somebody else. So hopefully, wish us luck that we don't get a bummer. Yeah. And it's going to make our filming interesting. I got some ideas on strapping a camera up there.
Oh,
although,
yeah.
I don't know if leaving those forks up extended for hours is a great idea
or
not.
We're going to build a little man basket, and we're going to put you and your camera in it and get you up there out of the way and forget about you, man.
Exactly. So we'll have to see what type of nonsense we can come up with this thing. Thanks for watching or listening and watching. If you haven't figured out, this is filmed, and we have a camera in the shop. It's on EC2. You can watch this. This is sort of a test for us and ways to put out more details about these projects for those of you who are gluttons for punishment. And it's a place for me to get the hang of speaking publicly and practice some skills I don't have, and to sort of make the most out of this experience, not just with our channel, but building this house. Hopefully we only have to do it one time, because it's going to be a lot of work. And by the way, just for context and timing, today I put that video up today of the survey, which really is the first video besides, you know, now that we're kind of back at it, that our audience has seen. I haven't really looked at it. It's not the most exciting video, but I hope people are happy to see where we are. Not only are we not giving up on this project, but we are doubling and tripling down on making sure it happens. So thanks for watching. Any other words about heavy equipment?
Just two things, and I'm kind of rewinding the tape here. One of the considerations in buying a tool is how you're going to move it from job to job, if you're moving it from job to job. And we're not. I mean, this telehandler is going to live right there on this house project. We're going to use it there for however long it takes us to get the heavy work done.
Yeah.
I need to put a new roof on this shop. We could bring it out here one time, but I don't see putting it on a lowboy and moving it around Douglas County very much.
By the way, how are they going to drop it off at the bottom of the hill and like drive it up Dacia?
Yeah.
You think it's just, I mean, it's a big full lowboy semi that moves those things, right?
Not a one, but it will be it may come over on a tilt bed trailer and it might come on over on a short lowboy. But we'll probably have them unloaded at the theaters or something, and we'll just
drive it up the hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not easy to move those around. You got to call those guys up anytime you want to move it. Maybe we could try like middle of the night. We could make a distraction in town and take another route home and just drive it home.
We could.
Hopefully not. Hopefully we can just leave it stationary for the next year or two while the house goes up. And we are, let me just emphasize again how lucky we are to have a neighbor who's okay with us using his space, because that empty house pad is almost priceless in terms of our staging, even parking this equipment and the workers' trucks. And I have a hard time imagining how we would do it without that lot right there.
It'd be hard.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for chiming in. If you have questions or comments, put them in the description of this video on YouTube. And if you have feedback about how these are working or something in particular you'd like to hear, let us know. And if you're paying attention to this, reach out to Andrew Camerata, and we'll try to do the same, but it would be fun to talk to him about his equipment. He did a good video about his background in you know, dirt work. So he's kind of put all that out there, but I'd still like to hear him explain his mindset when he's shopping for equipment. I have a feeling he just kind of shoots first, asks questions later. But, I mean, he can't say he's doing it wrong because he certainly gets a lot of work done.
He makes it happen.
That's all right. Sure. Thanks, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you.